Hi, so thank you. Anyone who is watching this, the attention on our podcast is really fantastic. And it's my role to make sure this is entertaining and knowledgeable, relevant to you. So I hope I keep your attention. So you're listening to BIP Chat, and BIP stands for Business is Personal. And we truly believe it is. Our life is so intertwined with our personal life and our business life. It's very hard to keep emotion out of our business. And Thomas and I created a community in 2020 called BIP 100. And we have been searching for experts in particular fields. So we're an expert community. So we have 100 experts who all do diverse things, support niche areas. And today we're going to be talking to Alex Pink, who is an expert in filmmaking. And this is a really relevant subject to all of us. We are, most of us, I would say, are content creators. And the world has moved on over the last 20 years from the written content and very much into the film content. If you think about the way that people behave now, watching short videos on LinkedIn, short videos on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, creating film is important to us all. Some of you may have wider ambitions that you want to create a film, actually create a film. And there is a project that Alex is doing, which is really exciting as a producer and bringing in the investment for one of his clients to create a film. And some of you may be just really interested in how AI and the media is changing, and also how you tell stories on film. So I hope you enjoy this. I hope you feel it's educational. And I hope you do get to know Alex after this show. So welcome, Alex. Very excited to have you with us. So Alex, I have introduced you as a filmmaker, and there has definitely been a journey to this point for you. So before we really talk into your business, Alex, let's understand this journey into this point that's given you this incredible expertise and wisdom that you've got around what you produce now.
Yeah, absolutely. So the journey has spanned quite a wide areas of work from theatre through TV and film, short film, art productions, Arts Council productions. We toured theatre internationally, and also a fair bit of writing. And so spanning across all of those things, the common thread is storytelling. My kind of native language for telling stories is imagistically moving image. So moving image production is kind of the banner under which I have had my expertise since 2010 sort of time. To give some dates around it, theatre was both in my childhood growing up and also quite heavily from about 2007, 2012. So that kind of time I was quite heavily involved in theatre. We toured internationally. Had hundreds of plays coming into the resident theatre that I was involved with, and worked with quite a lot of sort of public institutions. But it's really storytelling and moving image production that are kind of the threads that bind all of that work together.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I know you do some, big projects, but I was really lucky because I obviously you're a client of ours, and I said to you I wanted to create a new speaker showreel. And I actually enjoyed watching the, I mean, you set up for about 2.5 hours, 2.5, 3 hours to get it all right. And then we just spent a few hours filming me. And then it was like magic came this video back to me, which is just so incredibly edited and tells the story. And it was absolutely beautiful. And I know that's not your core business, but I just want to say that I've got firsthand experience of what it means to be part, to create a story and help somebody hold their attention through that. So obviously creating a film, there's the producer, there's the writer, there's the editors, there's the cameramen, and I get the impression you've done all aspects of that. Am I right?
Yes. Yes, I've acted in Alan Ayckbourn's Confusions and toured it to Slovenia as an actor. I've stage managed many productions, including like That'll Be the Day. I directed an act of it, the second act. I directed for that. That would have been around 2011, something like that. You know, in one theatrical production, I was doing the sound and vision operation and stage management behind the scenes, played an auto cue, ran around the theatre, legged it into one of the wings, went on stage, had my throat slit, and then had to run off, got dragged as a dead body off stage and had to run back up to the box and press the next sort of gunfire sound cue or whatever it was. You know, since then I've worked on corporate productions for everything from banks, business coaching organizations, small businesses, startups, you know, you name it really. I've kind of done that. I ran a small studio at the BBC, which is actually where I first met Thomas. It was 2012. And we got chatting after that shoot. So I was like a camera guy there, director of photography, I suppose, but it wasn't really a big enough shoot to warrant that sort of title. I've been, you know, there was a short film project that was lovely that I got recruited into direct, which was a unique experience in the sense that I didn't produce anything. So I just arrived, the cast was sorted, the, you know, crew was sorted, my name was written on the clapperboard, and I could just direct. So, you know, across all of that, it's a very wide range of experience. And I try to bring that holistic approach into everything that I do, including focusing my camera now.
Did you just notice it went out? But then I'm curious about the fact you've even got a camera that focuses you on Zoom.
I put it in manual now because it can't handle itself, can it?
I did wonder whether that was my eyes. I know I'm feeling a bit dehydrated, so I didn't know whether. That's an amazing, dedicated journey. So let's start with, because I think this is really fascinating. I've obviously shared a very small project, which I don't think you do many of those. The ones that I did, that's not really your business model. There is a project you're doing which is around animation, and I hear this being talked about, animation. Tell us a little bit of a story around that project, because you're bringing in investors and you're writing it, and tell us about that as a case study of a animation
Yeah,
production.
so I love to work with authors, writers, creative people, storytellers. And when I set up the, you know, I got kind of full time involved in animation in 2020. And that was partly because of lockdowns. There was a, you know, less filming and more animation work going on. But it was also around the time there were some technical developments. You know, Nvidia had released their RTX cards only a couple of years before. We had Threadrippers coming out from AMD. I don't want to get too technical, but the landscape was right to set up an animation studio that could do CGI, photoreal, as well as character animation. And the strategy there, big picture, was to align with authors and writers and creative people that had ideas and the wherewithal to back those to some extent so that they would have a realistic chance of being creatively developed and then brought in front of investors. And there's a number of projects, and there are front-running projects. The one that you're referring to, I think, and that probably makes the best discussion, is a, you can think of it as sort of Puss in Boots meets Stuart Little in London Town. That's kind of the film. It's Borrowers-esque because there's these mice that live in a parallel universe under the underground, and they come up and take things from the human world and bring it back down. So it has leanings in that direction. It's a coming of age story, that's really aimed at the kind of 9 to 18 kind of age range. That would be the kind of core audience, kind of older kids. It's a bit leery, it's got some rude jokes, it's, you know, it's that kind of cinema going young kids. But it's got a really nice moral. You know, it's quite traditional in terms of the message that it's sending, which has become increasingly rare. 20 years ago, it would have been absolutely right at home alongside the others, and also potentially have been in a crowded market. Nowadays, it's a boy coming of age who realizes he needs to save the world and then sets out on an adventure to do it. And actually, it's been probably sort of the last time that was popular was, you know, Neo in the Matrix and Lord of the Rings and Frodo. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, that one of the producers that we're working with, who's kind of a veteran, said he's seen that pendulum swing back and forward about three times in his career. And he's got about 20 years on me. But there's a kind of a gap in the market for that right now. So we developed that. We built some of the characters. We did some still image work that were sort of designed to look kind of like freeze frames of it. Then we got that ready for an investor. We got some private investment. Market valuation of the project of over £1 million, which was very nice. Sold a very small share, raised some seed money, and we're doing a trailer. So that's in production now. We're speaking with distributors in non-English speaking territories at the moment. One in Norway is interested, so there's a few people waiting for that trailer. So that's operating, I suppose, at a kind of, you know, if you think of the lighting and sound and things that I spent a few hours with you setting up, and you kind of work out all the different things and then raising investment, there's a whole hierarchy of the production in terms of the scale. So I suppose that's kind of a good flagship project. Another one on Friday, we've got a short film slash pilot sample episode in production of Molly Arbuthnot's Oscar the Fairy Cat book, which I don't have to hand, but you can Google it. And she and some of her friends that are actors and so on were here on Friday in this room, and we were recording, and I posted a picture of that on LinkedIn. So that was quite fun. So that will hopefully do the short film festivals, and, you know, get some screenings, and potentially also go on as a TV show
How
thereafter.
exciting. Oh, wow, amazing. So the sort of people, so you said that, you know, storytellers, children's book authors, those are the sort of people that are coming to you for this type of production, are they?
I mean, there's various different people. You know, that the creator of the World of Mice, which is the mice film that I was talking about, is a chap called Paul Wilson. He was actually a professional tennis player for throughout his sort of late teens and 20s, and comes from a very interesting family, and is very, very switched on, very intelligent guy, and spent 7 years studying acting on a very deep sort of psychological level. And so he really kind of understands the storytelling bit, you know, the paradigms and the hero's journey and all of that sort of stuff on quite a deep, deep level. So that was very apparent when we were conversing. And then also my sort of business insights on where we could potentially go for funding and how we could take it forward and what we needed to develop at different steps and so on. That was a match. The nice thing about that on both sides is that there's a degree of market competition. So, you know, I get pitched quite a lot of ideas, and I have to be somewhat select. You know, I don't take every idea I'm pitched and then put it in front of my entire investor network. That wouldn't be good for my reputation, right? So the fact that the projects that I take forward are selected, but also Paul had the choice of animators or animator studios or producers or however you want to kind of conceptualize me. He would have had competition for that because ultimately he was investing in this project and spending money. So right away from the get-go, the two core people that are making this happen, me and him, have both selected each other in a kind of free market competition. And I think that gives it a kind of health and vitality anyway as a project. And then the investor is likewise just from free market competition. It gives some grounding to the valuation, and everyone's sanity checking each other in a healthy and productive way.
And what sort of people invest then? What type of people are investing in these sort of things?
So investing in the creative space is often seen as significantly different than other stuff, and it is and it isn't. There isn't a tangible need in the same way as there might be with a product that cleans up plastic from the oceans or something. But ultimately, it's also, the arts tend to be the mirror that we hold up to society. So it's how we see ourselves on a macro scale or a micro scale. We learn. So one of the key things that I'm sort of always sharing is kind of the concept that the difference between knowledge and wisdom is experience, and stories are the vessel for shared experiences. So if someone goes out and they have a very painful experience learning a very hard lesson, then you kind of want to listen to that story and not actually have to live that yourself, but you can kind of gain it from them. If they just give you the abstract knowledge, that's fine and that can be useful, but it's not the same as having the experience and understanding how they learned what they learned and so on. So there are more tangible uses for it. Then there's case studies and there's gaps in the market. So like I said, there isn't really a young boy coming of age needs to save the world out there. And so you've got a whole generation of young men that we can increasingly observe have grown up without ever really watching a story of a boy coming of age and needing to save the world. And that's kind of an important role model for a population. And if they're going to manifest that in their life later as building the technology that takes the plastic out of the ocean, and that's their particular manifestation of saving the world, it helps if they've had the concept that they're able to do that portrayed to them. So it's pretty essential stuff. And Britain is odd as a country as well, because we are, it's one of the industries that I think that we're fairly world leading in, but we tend to do high quality and low volume. So, there's James Bond, there's Harry Potter, they're like, when we do things, we tend to do it well, but they're 6-episode series and they're kind of understated. So, you can go back right to Shakespeare. And I think that comes out of a culture of freedom and free expression and all of that stuff. When we had international theatre festivals, and I was quite young, I was in my teens, and I said, I just don't really understand the stories in plays that have been brought here from Slovenia and stuff. And they said, well, the thing is, a lot of their art is more subtle because they were doing this mostly under regimes like the Soviet Union. And they, anyone who's seen Lives of Others can kind of understand that, it's a great, great film if anyone hasn't seen it. And the Stasi police in this case in East Germany are, watching this playwright and his actress girlfriend or wife, and they're surveying that to make sure that he's not creating any art that might be anti-state. So they're more subtle, whereas we've, for a long, long time, we've been able to just throw ideas around and experiment, which has made us quite good at it. And the Americans, obviously.
And then the investors, the people who would invest, this is it. So you say they.
Right. Well, so this is
quite different to the investors.
Yeah. So we've got a British investor in this case. So it's, the Americans get it more and they find us quite quaint. You can do that. There are film investors specifically, but they are inundated with proposals. And it's not necessarily the best route if you're kind of an independent filmmaker trying to make relationships. The investor that we got, and this is the other kind, is that, they're in tech and property or something quite down to earth. And they just quite like the idea. For us, the relationship building with that investor took about 4 months. They gave us loads of comments on the script. Not all of them were very good comments, and they won't mind me saying that. But we went through them all. We spent about 4 hours on a Zoom reviewing every comment and appraising it and shared the videos back with the investor so he could kind of get a sense. Because I think there's a sort of false idea that what you're kind of doing is egotistically what I want to see on screen. Whereas actually, if you follow those conversations, you realize that it's very much not that. It's advocating for, there's a gap in the market. There's a story that needs to be told. There's a way that it will resonate with audiences, and there are connotations to everything you do, and you're kind of working that stuff out, and it's a lot more grounded than they think. So, I mean, I can only speak to my experience, but those are the two kinds. There's film investors, and then there's everyone else who just thinks it's an interesting industry.
Yeah, brilliant. And I think the big subject that everybody gets curious about is AI. And everybody loves to get really extreme on what AI is going to do. What are your thoughts on AI at the moment? How is it going to help the industry? How is it going to be a challenge?
Well, like all technologies, it's going to help. What we do as an industry is tell stories. So there's a lot of editors who might make corporate videos or promotional stuff, and it's going to be great because it's going to be kind of like a wider ranging stock library that they can make shots from. It's going to reduce the technical and cost barrier for filmmakers. But really, there's an element, I think, in the industry. And because I've got quite a wide investor network, my LinkedIn feed is dominated by investment discussion, which is very tilts towards, hype and kind of bubbles and disruption and move fast and break things and so on. When actually there's a very stable, functioning industry already in place with film and media and so on. It's, pushing on $1 trillion of, if not more, it's a very up and running thing. And so then the question is, first of all, there's obviously the copyright issue, and that hangs over everyone with it. And if you're gonna, distribute into cinemas or on TV or anything like that, you can't be gaming that. You can do it with corporate videos or an online video or a post with a bit of AI art, but you can't put it in anything that goes in front of a paying audience without being pretty sure on that. But putting that to one side, from a tech standpoint, the real question is, how does it integrate with what we're doing? Or what parts of it does it disrupt? And how does it help tell stories? So the limitations of the moment is that a lot of the companies that have hype aren't really integrated into any of the existing pipelines. But they are being integrated. So Adobe's integrating it into their suite, and now you can pretty much like circle stuff in Photoshop and tell it you want that to be changed, and it'll kind of use AI to do it. For years, they've had Content Aware, which is sort of AI. One of the very earliest bits of AI was the Heal Brush, which is just like the little clone thing to like remove spots or whatever. But I mean, that was AI, and that came in like 2002 or something. So there's a long history of this. The pipeline, which is what the industry is aiming for, is something like this. So this gives a big picture that should allow the audience to conceptualize each individual bit of news. You want to be able to visualize something in concept art with the generative image stuff, so Midjourney or DALL-E or whatever. Once you've visualized it, you then need to build it. So an AI that can turn the visual into some kind of 3D model, that's being built. Then you have the ability to animate it. So NVIDIA is directly working on physical animation that can understand the weighting of the character. So if you could do a text prompt of they walk in and slip up and fall over, and then it just animates that, then great. So now you've got the character to building the character to animating the character. Then you need to render it. And so one of the other things that NVIDIA is working on is neural network rendering. So we had scanline rendering and physical rendering, and we have GPU rendering, which is sometimes called real-time rendering. They're not that dissimilar, but a neural network rendering would be on another kind of level. So that then becomes the new rendering engine. And then, of course, you've got sound, and people are starting to, the visuals determine the sound, and then you've got editing, and Adobe is starting to integrate things where you can say, here's a bunch of footage, edit it into a sequence, and then I'll adjust it. The key thing the industry wants is to be able to go into any one of those areas, and then it needs to integrate with the existing system such that if I don't like the way that it slips up on first thing, but I love almost everything, but I want to change one detail, then I can actually go in and change it. So that's something like what we're aiming at building. And then Sora has come along, and no one really knows until we can get hands on with it how that's either going to compete with an area, cooperate with an area, or disrupt an area of the pipeline I just described. So that's kind of a question mark. But I don't see the large, universal or one of the big studios using a text to video interface to generate a film. You know, that's kind of going to be, the more you have a story to tell, the more unfeasible that kind of pipeline becomes, because it doesn't tell your story. And that's a real problem.
Yeah, the personalization of it, the proper. Yeah, I get that. Amazing. The depth of knowledge you've got, Alex, is absolutely incredible. It's incredible listening to you. And I'm hoping some of the people that are listening in here will be thinking about maybe young people they know, you know, nieces, nephews, children who are studying media, because there's so much to learn from you. And I know you've got some really deep values around your connection with this industry. And I know you're going to be doing a bit of lecturing into university soon, aren't you?
Yeah, that's being arranged. I haven't got a date to share, unfortunately, or I'd love to plug that talk, but yeah. I'm awaiting the details, and things were pushed back and stuff.
Amazing.
But there is, I need to do more public speaking, and that's something that I've been, that's on my to-do list for the year for sure. But also, you know, consultancy is part of what I do. If anyone can benefit from that, or they want insight into an area of production, you know, one of the things that I've done with businesses is help them set up their own studios. So they might not want, you know, they might want to actually bring stuff in house or build a new capability or integrate something into their pipeline or check that things are being produced in as efficient way as they should be. All of that is possible.
That sounds really good.
You know,
I imagine somebody who's heading it up in a company, they almost need to know they've assembled a team, but somebody to do some due diligence to check that that team actually has the knowledge that they're saying they have.
Very hard. And I mean, you know, I won't, you know, I've seen situations in teams that have been left to their own devices for a long period of time, you know, trying to make out that something takes a week when it takes an hour. And I'm not exaggerating that. So inefficiencies like that can and have, and I've witnessed it, cost £20 million a year clients.
I remember Thomas saying, I think it was Alan Sugar that said it, where there's mystery, there's margin. So wherever
you understand something,
that's where people will exploit and make the money. So I think, yeah, amazing knowledge that you've got. And love this conversation. It's so, I hope if you've been listening to the end here, you've really enjoyed this. Share this conversation with people that you know that are really interested in this media industry. I think what I find fascinating is there was, I had this little moment of reflection when I can remember being 21 years old, working in a company in Twickenham, and I was setting up a mail shot, and I was writing a Word document, because Word I don't think existed then. And I had to put a code around a word to embolden it. And I had a big list of codes, because you know, you just didn't have what we have now. And I'm thinking, here we are, I don't know, 36, 7 years later, listening to the advancements that are happening. And now it's just going to be incredible watching how this industry advances, because so many people need to be content creators and want to be. And so very, very exciting conversation to listen to you. And if you'd like to continue this conversation with Alex, he's a super, super guy. And I think you can get a sense of some of his values around things that he really cares about. He's got some really deep values that really attracted us to having Alex, not only his expertise, but his attitude into our community. Find him on alexpink.co.uk. Is that right?
That's the one.
Alexpink, PINK.co.uk. Also, of course, we can connect you to Alex, and you can find him on LinkedIn, which he'll be tagged into that. So, thanks so much, Alex. Wonderful, wonderful to have this time with you.
My pleasure, Penny. Always lovely to chat with you, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, that's lovely. Not stopping. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, there you go. Sorry.